Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
It's The Breakdown. Jamali Maddox with the hook.
I am absolutely exhausted. I just came from Belfast in Dublin. Great, had a great show, especially Belfast. Belfast was fun, man. But Dublin, you were good too. I'm not taking favouritism, especially with that political climate. but yeah, man, I'm happy, man. Good, I'm happy, man, because today we got Rick Edwards on the podcast. Man, if you don't know Rick Edwards, he's an author. You know, he's wrote some science books. He's a presenter. He's a host. He's, you know, he's a lot of things, man. He used to do comedy as well. And all round lovely guy, man. Really knows his comedy, really loves his comedy. Very funny. Very funny guy, very smart guy. sounds like I'm being sarcastic. Very smart guy, very smart guy, very smart. I sound like Donald Trump when he calls someone smart. He's a smart guy because he likes me. But no, good dude, man. Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to keep it too long. I mean, sometimes I ramble on, sometimes I don't. This one's not going to be a ramble because I want you guys to hear this one. So it was like, do you know what I like? When I do these podcasts, the ones I like is when it sounds like just two dudes that enjoy each other's company having a chat. I think they're the ones that are good, and I think they're the ones that, you know, that's the type of podcast I want to make, and they're the ones that I enjoy making, because if I enjoy making it, I hope that you enjoy hearing it. I think that's what kind of resonates, is the sort of enjoyment you can hear from me, and sort of having a laugh, and catching up, and sort of learning about, you know, because I've met him in passing, he's, you know, he's come to my show in Edinburgh, he's really lovely with his lovely wife, and, you know, we sort of... you know, we spoke and that, but it was nice to actually sit down and actually have a real conversation with him, man, and, you know, and you kind of find out his ideas and you kind of find out more about him as a person, his upbringing, stuff like that. So I really like this one. Yeah, I really enjoyed making this one. So basically, I'm just going to get into it. So this is Rick Edwards, and my name's Jamali Maddox, and this is The Breakdown with the Hook. How have you been going to beer for?
Actually, quite a long time now.
Yeah.
I always fought it because my dad has a beard, and I didn't want to look like my dad, and now I've just embraced the fact that I look a bit like my dad.
Yeah.
It's fine.
It was that weird moment when you realised, I remember I saw myself in the mirror the other day, I was like, fuck, I look like my dad. It's like a weird moment. When you really realise that that's like the age thing.
Dad got the beard?
No.
He hasn't got a beard?
No, he ain't got a beard, but I've got his nose.
Yeah.
I've got his teeth.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got his, like, just the head, you know. My dad's...
You've got your dad's head.
Yeah, I got my dad's head. But he looks not...
Good bits of have him.
Yeah, not bad. But he also, he's way shorter than me as well, so it kind of...
like a little mini Jamali.
He looks like my kid, but old, like I had an old baby.
Like Benjamin Button.
Yeah, I had a Benjamin Button style baby. And he's got like a big gold tooth because, you know, I let my child make his own decisions. Where'd you grow up?
In Southgate, North London.
Mm. Are you a London dude?
Yeah.
Oh, for some reason, I didn't know you was a London guy.
Yeah, well, no, I've got a sort of unplaceable accent now because all my family are from North London and sort of Tottenham and like around there. And then my dad got a job in Portsmouth and was like, okay, we're all moving down to Portsmouth. My mum was like, no, we're not.
Yeah.
And so she made my, for I think like 6 months or a year or something, made my dad stay down in Portsmouth during the week in some shitty little flat and then come back on the weekend. Back on the weekends. And eventually my dad put his foot down and was like, no.
We are going.
Yeah. So we moved down there and I went to school there. And everyone I don't even know what the Portsmouth accent is, but there is a sort of there's a Portsmouth accent, and there's definitely a Portsmouth vibe, which is Aggie.
Yes,
really
Portsmouth,
really,
because it's the rivalry is Portsmouth and Southampton.
Yeah,
and I'll be honest with you, man, I prefer Southampton.
Yeah, me too.
Portsmouth ain't no joke town.
Portsmouth is rough.
Yeah, they like a punch up.
Yeah.
I've seen a couple punch-ups in Portsmouth, man.
Yeah, I've been involved. Not, I didn't want to be.
Yeah. You've got dragged in.
But they, yeah. And also, you sort of throw the Navy in. And that just gives a little extra bit of spice.
A little taste. Yeah. It's not the Army. It's
no,
the Navy.
No, the Navy.
They've been at sea.
They've been at sea. And when they're not at sea, they're just like, well, I want to do things.
Yeah.
I want to hit him.
Yeah. No, but it's no joke, man.
No, I don't really. You know, no offense to Portsmouth, but also
all the offense to Portsmouth.
loads of offense. It's a shit off. And I don't go back.
So when did you move back from Portsmouth?
So I went to uni, and then
where did you go?
Cambridge.
Oh shit!
Yeah.
Damn.
That's right.
Yes, brother.
Yeah. The one as well. The one. First person in my family to go to university,
and it was one of the best universities.
Yeah, it was a good one, and genuinely, it's still the thing that that's not true. I always think that my aunt did go to university, but I always forget that, and everyone forgets it.
Where'd
so
you go?
I sort of take it. I don't know.
Some shit.
Yeah, that's exactly Portsmouth.
you might as well not have gone at all.
I just I sort of think it's still me, and genuinely, it's the thing that my mum and dad are most proud of, like, it's the thing that they,
even though you've done telly,
they're like, cool, he does, whatever he does, but he went to university actually. And then I never went back, just moved to North London again.
Okay. And would you study at Cambridge?
I did, just because I'm just an absolute legend. I started off doing maths.
Okay. Did you want to do that's a weird subject
just,
to pick.
Yeah, I just, the thing is, I just found maths easy when I was at school.
Mm.
And it's one of those things where if you find it easy, you don't really need to do that much work. It just sort of clicks. And so I was like, well, I'll have more of that.
Mm.
I had absolutely no idea what I wanted to do with my life at all. Went to do maths. And the thing about doing maths at somewhere like Cambridge is, when I went there, I was like, are they all going to be insane sort of weirdos?
Rain Man.
Yeah, like, is it just going to be a lecture hall full of Rain Men?
Yeah.
And the answer is yes.
Yeah.
Almost like beyond. So I had a picture in my head of what it was going to be like, and it was worse than that.
It is. It's like you know, Good Will Hunting, but everybody's Will.
Everybody. But without the social skills.
Yeah.
Because he's actually like fun to hang out with.
Yeah.
So they're all like that, and there's a kind of thing where they say, okay, the stuff we're going to set you to do for like your homework is hard.
Yeah.
So we're going to set you like 6 or 7 questions a week. And I was like, 6 or 7 questions? This is going to be an absolute breeze.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, you're going to have to work with, like, in groups to get these done.
Oh, I hate
and I was like, nah. And then I tried to do it. I was like, no, I can't do this. But equally, I couldn't join a group because I didn't know.
Yeah.
I just didn't. I don't know. I wasn't one of them. Basically.
You were the one of their gang.
And I couldn't. I was basically excluded.
I like the one guy who had the social skills wasn't allowed because they have a lacking of social skills. Because the people who lack social skills kind of come together.
Yeah, they're having a great time together, I think.
Damn.
Like I did, I remember sitting in one of their rooms with a load of them once, like early on, and just thinking, well, I can't. I feel that they don't like me. Yeah. I feel really uncomfortable. This isn't gonna.
Is Cambridge fun? Because it's not like, they got some unis. Because I remember when I was like that age, it was like, if you want to party, you go Hertfordshire.
Yeah.
That was the place. Mm. All my boys went Hertfordshire. Mm. I didn't go Hertfordshire, but all my boys went there. It's like, there was a couple party ones. Is Cambridge literally, do people go there just to learn, or do people, is it actually fun?
No, I think you eventually gravitate towards the people who are more like you and more interested in like having a nice time at uni, and you find them and then it's good. But in my first term, I spent a lot of time on the phone to my mum and dad and my mates who are at other unis, just going, I can't just gotta get out of here, because it was horrible. And I was kind of miserable, and then I found people, and then it was good.
I think so.
I mean, you know, it's not It's definitely not as fun as other unis. Yeah. Like, I go and visit like my mates at Bristol. I'm like, this is wicked.
Yeah, they were the best time. They live in skins.
They're basically living in skins. I'm like, we are not living skins again.
No.
We're having an okay time, but like,
did you do footlights and all that?
I did a little bit. Yeah. So I started. Okay. That was good for me because when I was at school, I just got in trouble for just wanting to be like the class joker. And that was all I was really interested in, and it didn't, you know, and it got me in trouble, and I got like kicked out of a school, and so having an outlet, like a legitimate outlet to like get up in front of people and try and make them laugh was a good thing for me.
I guess it is that thing. I remember when I was in school, I had different issues. My thing was like I was so shit at school. I had dyslexia, dyspraxia.
Yeah. All of them.
ADHD. Listen, mate. Why do you think I work so much in
full
the business?
Yeah.
Why do you think I'm getting so much work right now, right? But like, and you get to that level, and I mean, you get to that place, and it's like, you know, and it's just that it's that weird thing of, you know, being the class clown. I look back on it now, and I go, fuck, I got in a lot of trouble for doing that shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like they were constantly trying to kick my ass out of school, man.
Yeah.
But it's you know, and it's that weird thing of how it's like what they deemed as bad. Like I look back on it now and I go, it wasn't bad.
I would argue that I wasn't doing anything particularly bad.
Yeah.
But I do take the point that it was disruptive. It was definitely disruptive. Yeah. In nothing that I was doing was enhancing other people's learning experience. I get that.
Yeah, fair enough. You wasn't doing it like in a crazy kooky way, but making them learn at the same time.
No.
Like a teacher going into the inner city school and learning how to rap dance.
No, I wasn't Michelle Pfeiffer. to be honest.
Yeah.
No. And but so then, and I'd always loved comedy, and me and my dad would go and watch comedy.
Oh, stand up.
I'd never, yeah.
Oh, who'd you go watch?
It's funny because I guess that we're in Portsmouth, and so you're just going, it's just big people when they come to Portsmouth. So people like Frank Skinner, who I was just like, I remember watching him do like 10 minutes of crowd work at the start of his set, just being like, how can anyone be?
It looks like magic.
This funny.
Yeah.
Or like off the cuff. Like, I just didn't get it. I was just like, it blew my mind.
Yeah.
And then Harry Hill, like I loved Harry Hill. Yeah, and that Harry Hill, that was exciting because you'd like watch him on telly and then you get to see him with little Stouffer. And so people like that, like big comics.
You weren't going to like the clubs and that.
I was not, no, I wasn't going to the clubs. I don't think I probably didn't know they existed, to be honest.
When I
got to university, I didn't really know anything about, I didn't know that comedy was a thing that you could do. I just think it doesn't feel like that's an option. Knowing that your careers in your careers office goes comedian or work in telling. I'd never heard that. I didn't know anyone who did it.
Yeah.
I didn't know anyone who knew anyone who did it.
It looks like a closed shop.
Yeah.
Because you think like, well, they must have just had someone in the family that did it and then they do it. It's like, you know, like you wouldn't know how to break into the wrestling business. Like it's just being like, well, being a stand up was just as elusive as being an astronaut. There was no clear career path towards
even,
it.
Like, I mean, this is mad, but even like astronaut was the kind of thing that you would hear kids say, I want to be an astronaut.
Yeah.
I don't think I ever heard anyone say, I want to be a comedian.
Watching them, did you want to do it? Like watching the Frank Skinner, watching the Harry Hill?
Maybe. I don't think consciously I thought that. But then when I got to university and people said, oh, you can do this, you can do this thing, you just go and try out. If you've got any material. I didn't have any material, but I was like, oh, I'll jot some stuff down and audition. Yeah.
How was the bits?
Bad. I think bad, but I think everyone is bad then.
Oh my God.
And so it was, within the scheme of things, it was all right.
The first time
I did anything, like it went well.
Yeah.
And I was like, cool, I can do a bit more of this.
Yeah.
But it still didn't quite register. Although then, when you do footlights, people start saying, oh yeah, of course, like, Stephen Fry did this and yada yada and all these people, you're like, oh, okay. So I guess it started to feel like it might be
an existing thing.
Exactly. A thing that was accessible.
When you, when I first met you, we had done Safeway together.
Yes.
I think that's the first time we met at Safeway. Yeah, and I remember because I knew of you. Because I know comics, I knew Alfie Brown. Alfie Brown was my boy.
And
you talk about it. I would like hear of you.
Yeah.
And I can't remember leaving Safeway being like, yo, that Rick is fucking funny. Cause I remember you were like, you're riffing, you wrote some of your own jokes.
Yeah.
And I remember being like, that guy dude's funny. And I didn't realize you had done stand-up already.
Yeah, I mean,
how long was you a stand-up for?
Not very long, and I didn't sort of, I didn't put in enough. Two things really. I didn't put in enough work, and I wasn't that good. I think I was good, but I was doing stuff at exactly the same time as Joe Wilkinson. So me and him used to do a double act for a bit.
Oh, shit.
And Diane Morgan.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that when you're first starting doing that open mic stuff in London, you're kind of looking around at all the other people doing it.
Mm.
And we sort of gravitated towards each other because we kind of liked what the other people were doing. But they were just better than me.
I could just
see it. And I
didn't really wanted to do it.
And yeah, and they were putting, in fairness, like Joe was doing, you know, 4 or 5 open mic slots a week.
Mm.
And I was doing one. Maybe
and even then you just went for the
point. Yeah, exactly. Like, and then the really like the stupidest thing that I didn't get for quite a while, because when I'd done stand up at university in this comedy club at Footlights, sort of the same people are coming like most nights, and so you just do new stuff. Like I would never do the same stuff twice, because it didn't. It didn't even occur to me that you would.
That's a real not trap, but it's a real thing I see a lot of open micers do, and they go, "I'm trying new stuff." I'm like, "You haven't honed the other stuff yet." But I probably did the same when I was starting as well. Yeah,
yeah. But I remember being surprised when I'd see people do the same shtick.
You think they're cheating?
Yeah. Now I did. I was like, "Well, that's come on. I've heard you do that, and it wasn't great last time."
Yeah, yeah. For
it's getting a bit better though.
Yeah. You've honed that piece of shit that you're fucking trying to troll out.
Yeah. Desperately polishing. But it was, I liked it, but I didn't. So I did it for, I don't know, sort of year, 18 months or something, in London, and was, I would say I was fine. But what I was better at was just sort of ad-libbing, just like being reactive,
so emceeing
funny
and shit,
that kind of stuff. I felt more comfortable with than writing.
Yeah, I guess because it's one of the things that's more just yourself, and it's more just like sort of warming the room.
Yeah,
and sort of, you know.
Yeah, which is weirdly, it's kind of what, like when you're the class clown, you don't like come in with your material, do you? You don't think, right, do you know what? Yeah,
I've got this bit that's going to kill at break time.
Got it written on your hand. I've got something here.
Yeah, and if the bit starts bombing, you have to, you've got to start looking at it like, I fucked up the bit, I missed the punchline.
Teacher's flashing a light.
You have to wrap up on that. Yeah, fuck yeah. You guys getting gonged off. Jamal. So you're at Cambridge, you're doing the Footlights, you've done maths, and you didn't stick with maths, I'm guessing.
I didn't stick with maths. I did it for a year, passed my exams, and then just thought, I can't, like, I just, I sort of...
Fucked it off.
Yeah. And thought, oh, what's going to be easier? Science?
Yeah.
And so I did,
you like to make things easy for yourself, isn't
it? Yeah, so I did science. But then, to be fair, because of the A-levels I'd chosen, it's not like I could just turn around and go, do you know what, guys? I think I'm going to do history.
Yeah.
So did science and
biology, physics.
So you start off doing a load, and then gradually.
I like how I was like, I can get into a real scientific conversation with you, like science, physics,
biology, and then I specialised ultimately in human impact on the environment.
Okay,
so. Sort of, I mean, climate change,
global woman myth.
Yeah, very much
myth.
Not a myth.
I love when people.
But before it was cool.
This was
when people were sort of talking a bit about global warming, but they weren't that into it.
I remember people say the ozone layer. The ozone layer. And you go, fuck
greenhouse
it.
Gases.
Well, because there's
a hole.
They had to explain it. There's a hole. And everybody's like, well, fuck the hole. Who gives a shit about the hole?
The hole will fill up. No.
Yeah. I remember I'd done a doc about it. I can remember throughout the doc, because I was doing stand up between it, and I just remember I kept on having to say in the doc, I'm not qualified to make this documentary. And it was all about global warming and environment stuff. And it was just, I just had to keep saying, I don't know enough about this subject. I had to keep on making that clear. And it's just, because I believe in global warming, and people go, why do you believe in it? Well, because smarter people than I, who have nothing to gain from saying that it's not happening.
Yeah.
Or is happening.
And also, if you think about how much the people who say it isn't happening do have to gain.
And they gain. Yeah. But then, like, I was in America and I saw this, and I met this teacher, and basically the oil companies pay the teachers to teach a certain curriculum. Do you know what I'm saying? And it's mad. And you go, that is insane. The teaching is being dictated by the thing. And it's like they go, well, you know, and even if you want to teach both sides, saying there isn't this, some people say this isn't happening, some people say it is happening, and then you let the, you know, and you let them decide for themselves. Mm. I'm even up for that, you know. But this, the idea, even though I think it is happening, I think it's dangerous to say it's not.
But then you get into that awful thing, which we have a lot, mainly in politics, but also with climate change discussions, of false balance. We're like, well, yeah, you can find either some lunatics or someone who has a lot of money riding on it to say this contrary viewpoint.
Mm.
But if you talk to anyone who, like the vast majority of smart people who work in this area are saying this thing. And then if you present that as, well, we've got this person and this person, that's not, there's a false equivalence.
Yeah.
You should have like 98 people on this side all like clamouring and talking.
And then one dude.
And then one poor guy going, well, I don't know, I just paid by Shell to say this.
Because is that, you know, cause I'm not a man of science by any stretch of imagination, but I just think with logic, you would think that ripping shit from the ground can't be healthy.
No.
And then sort of blasting stuff back into the ground with fracking.
Yeah.
It can't be good.
It's not a counterintuitive thing.
Yeah, it's just like it doesn't feel like that would be just from a logical standpoint.
Yeah.
You wouldn't think, well, yeah, no, that'd be fine. Yeah, there'd be oil and stuff.
I mean obviously, you know, it's not a sort of common sense thing, but if you do use common sense, you will come to the conclusion that you're saying, which is that can't be good.
It can't be good.
It can't
even
be
if
good.
Me and someone who has no knowledge of the subject, and I'm openly admitting it, I wouldn't just out of logic think it would be good to rip things that were in the ground naturally.
No.
And just rip it out at an exponential rate.
Right.
We're taking a little bit of oil.
Yeah, just like we're going to take all of it.
Yeah.
Quickly.
And then hope.
That's what we're going to do.
And then hope.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the mad thing. It's just like we're taking it and then we're just like, ah.
And then we'll...
Come on.
Well, is that sort
eat
of
all the fish?
It's the the sort of what are they called, techno optimists.
Yeah.
Techno optimists are just the people who go, yeah, you're right. It does seem like we're fucking it, but technology will save us because it always does.
Yeah,
and you're like, well,
hopefully, you hope.
But it also might not do.
Yeah,
that's your worry.
Yeah, we might not technologically advance
quickly
faster than we're fucking shit up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's why,
yeah.
You know, talking about, like, even just talking about these type of subjects, do you know what show I liked that I really liked it, was the free speech show you did.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that show, man.
I think it was,
and because I know there was, like, a couple moments in there. I know the one that went viral was the Akala clip with Tommy Robinson.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And Tommy Robinson wasn't at the point where he is now in terms of sort of relevancy.
No, it was an interesting one. So we did this, it was up in Sunderland, and we had Akala on the panel. We had some, I can't remember, a couple of other, decent panel.
Mm.
And at that point, Tommy Robinson was not at the
he
sort
had to be
of
just
level
at
he is
at
now,
that point.
But he was still around doing his thing.
Mm.
And we wanted to do a story that kind of touched on it, but we also didn't want to have him on the panel because he fundamentally didn't represent anyone. Like, it would have been very contentious to do that. But we thought, we'll have him in the audience, know that he's there, and then we can kind of
cut to him.
And we did that, and it was tough. It was tough because obviously my role in that is you have to be
objective.
You've got to try and be objective and neutral, which is what I've always tried with the politics stuff. But then with someone like that, it does get quite, you know, it's tricky. Luckily, Akala and him had a ding dong, and Akala is, you know, just a very,
very intelligent.
Not only very intelligent, but he's very articulate and doesn't. He's just very calm.
Mm.
Like, he just doesn't get. He doesn't, like, I feel like I would get wound up if I was him. He's just like, no, listen. It's actually like this.
Yeah,
and then
history
tells you,
and facts to back it up.
Yeah,
and
he's just like, he's like the perfect person
counterpoint
to have that argument with Tony Robinson, who also, in fairness, is very well prepared with his, like,
his point of view.
He knows his point of view, and he kind of knows the things that people are going to say to him.
Yeah, yeah.
And he has sort of quite spurious but well things that sound quite sort of convincing superficially to say back to
what was the other subject you did on that show?
We did we did all sorts, actually. I mean, we had a really interesting thing at the start of the second or third series, I think, and we'd because it came out of There's no show for young people about politics, which is
you've got the big question. Is that still running big question?
Yeah.
But that's not really. It was sort of like big question, but for my age group, which is good because big question it is for a more older crowd. I like it. I watch it. I'm not dissing it, but I'm saying it is a
different sort of different demographic, or like it's got a broad demographic,
yeah.
I suppose.
Yeah.
But we So it's basically, it was Question Time, made by the people who make Question Time, and we did it exactly like that.
Mm.
And Question Time is quite heavily formatted, and you don't really notice that when you watch it, but they know who they're going to at any point. Like they rehearse it all, and so we're going to get that point from here, that point from here, that point from here, and it's all, you know, it's well choreographed. And so the first series that we did was like that, and then the second series we were like, do you know what, I think it will be better if we try and be a bit more fluid and just we know we're going to talk about these four things, and beyond that let's just see where it goes. And if it goes off on a tangent, then we go with it up to a point. Which as a presenter is kind of a nightmare, because you're just thinking, oh God, an hour of and Question Time also there's an hour delay, so they record it and then they all watch it.
You should
on Free Speech, it was just live. Damn. And you're like, this could, you know, it's got the potential to be,
and contentious subjects.
Very inflammatory, quite heated
subjects.
Yeah, so the first one that we wanted to do with this new kind of looser format, or very very loose format. Was we were in the grounds of a mosque in Birmingham? I think it was in Birmingham. And we wanted to do a thing about being gay and Muslim.
Mm.
And the mosque just said, well, you're not doing that.
Yeah.
And then we sort of said, are we not? and in the end, we had to, and we kind of trailed that we were doing it.
Yeah.
And then in the end, we decided that actually, given that we were on their property and they were specifically saying we do not want you to do this subject, that we had to pull it, and did it the following week in Tottenham.
Yeah.
Which was fine, but also quite difficult when you're a show called Free Speech,
and people are basically saying.
But then you are on their property. Like I do.
No,
I think it was the right thing to do.
In terms of the property, yeah. I mean, the thing is, their property.
Yeah,
and they, you know, if they say, you know, we don't want this thing happening on our property, I think it's good. But I don't think, you know, and this is my opinion. I'm not a Muslim either. I don't think that's. How can I put it? I don't think that they look good doing that, because at the same time, it's like, you know, the problem is, and I think that's what I liked about the show, is it had reality. There are people who are gay and they say they're Muslim. It's reality, you know, and you're not, this is when people go, oh, if we don't talk about it, it doesn't exist. And I go, no, that's not reality.
Yeah.
Reality is that there are people who believe that, and that, so, you know, you got to have that conversation.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, you know, but then it's their property, so what, you know, what are you going to do about it?
No, that's the thing. I agree. I think that from a sort of public perception point of view, it's not, it wasn't great for our show.
No, it wasn't good. No.
Definitely wasn't good, I don't think, for the mosque, to the wider community. But I think you, in that sort of example, you've just got to be respectful to what the people who have kindly said, yes, you can do your show here.
Yeah. Did you enjoy making that show, though?
Yeah, I loved it. I really loved it. I really miss it. And I think it's a real shame that there's nothing like that. Because my and I got really into it, and I, you know, wrote a book about it, about, you know, why it's terrible that young people aren't voting and why they should vote and all this kind of stuff. And I think it's a shame that there is nothing like it again now on telly, because you end up with this, you know, BBC Three, I think, do some good docs around issues, really good docs around issues, and that's great. But what they don't do is make the link between issues and politics, like sort of on the nose politics, like. And the fact that if you really want to affect those issues, you have to engage with politics, whether you want to or not. It's true. That's how big changes happen. Like, you can, you know, and online petition sites and all that are amazing, and they do have an effect. But the
it's only reaching a certain sect, isn't it? You're kind of preaching to the choir with
slightly,
those kind of things.
Slightly.
Would you make docs? Yeah, I think you'd be good making docs.
Yeah, I've done a few actually. I've done I did some like fast turnaround docs for BBC Three back in the day that were really like you know when it's like kickball at Scrumby, just like I don't really know.
So we did one. My whole second season of Hate Thy Neighbour.
Where you were just like, who am I talking to? And what am I saying? And what's their angle? Okay. But we did one on Pistorius. After he shot, we went out South Africa and did that. It was mental because you're in that terrible situation where you're sort of saying to people, "And did you see this coming?" And you're like, "Well, no, of course not." Like
he was an Olympic gold medalist. Yeah. Of course, we didn't see him shooting his wife.
Yeah, and even if. And even if people are like, "Yeah, he always had a bit of a like streak." Yeah, but that doesn't mean.
I know loads of people who can get a bit aggy. They're not going to shoot his wife. Yeah.
No. I did that, and I did one that was really bleak about the. Do you remember the Cleveland captives? You know, the women who'd been
in the house, and the black guy found them.
Yeah.
And they started making a meme out of it.
Yeah, great meme.
I did a
quick turnaround doc about that, and that was really horrible.
Because have you seen after what happened with that guy? Is that guy had been arrested years ago.
Yeah.
And then he was on 60 Minutes saying like, but you was arrested 5 years ago for smoking crack or whatever.
Yeah.
And I was like, what the fuck is that going to do with it?
Yeah, nothing. He was called Charles something, wasn't he?
I can't remember his name.
It's one of the great memes, actually.
I used to barbecue his house.
Yeah. Yeah, but I spoke to a guy who was like in a band with this, like Ariel Castro was the guy who'd kidnapped and raped these women. I mean, horrible, like the most horrible thing.
Horrific, right?
And this other guy who I spoke to would go over to the house and they'd like have band practice there. Yeah. And sometimes he'd like hear banging and Castro would just be like, that's the pipes. It's the pipes.
But it's that weird thing if someone tells you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Just thought
you'd believe
it.
Well, yeah, because you don't, when you hear a banging, you don't think that'll be the women he's got in prison.
Yeah. It's not your mind would even go there, would it?
Unless in a very weird set of events, Castro was just calling the women pipes. It was just his lingo.
That's what we called them, pipes.
I told you loads of times. I said the pipes are up there.
Well, he is a mad crime, bro.
Horrible.
Jamal. How long have you been presenting for? Because I know you used to do T4 as well.
Yeah. So
how did you get into it? Did you get scouted or did you apply for it?
Yeah,
or?
Kind of. So I did.
Was you modelling and stuff?
Yeah, I did a bit of that when I was at university and I was skint. So I was doing all sorts when I was at university because I didn't have. Very weird thing about Cambridge, you're not allowed to work.
What?
You're not allowed
to work
when you're at, like during
did
term
they give you
time.
Good bursaries or something?
Because, in the end, I had to sort of go like cap in hand and be like, well, if I'm not going to be allowed to work, then you're going to have to give me some money because I don't have any money. Yeah. Like, I don't know what to do about that.
That's mental.
So I like worked in a burger van when I was there, which was great fun, and worked in a pub and, you know, did like kitchen porter and all that kind of stuff. And then, and someone said, oh, you could do a bit of modelling. And at the time, it was like you get. Now I realise I was getting ripped off, but at the time, you go and do, you know, like I did this, like Weller hair advert, and they paid me 250 quid for like a day.
That's really
and,
bad
and,
money.
Yeah,
for
and no, but at the time, I'm like £250
for a day's job.
For a day,
yeah,
sweet. And they've given me my lunch, like every. I was just like, this is golden.
I was in a T-Mobile campaign, and I think I got like 200 quid.
Yeah,
and I remember thinking, I think I went and bought a pair of Christian Audigier jeans.
Oh,
you know, nice. Remember Christian Audigier.
Yeah.
Big Buddha at the back.
Yeah.
I thought I was a bad motherfucker, boy. They were naughty jeans, but I remember thinking I was the baddest man, man. I had to wear that. I used to wear that to fucking Romford Liquid Envy. White polo shirt, of course. Gentlemen's in the house. Right?
Yeah, you're not an idiot. Yeah, come on.
With a bit of boat shoes. Stop playing with me. You ain't playing no goddamn game. I had to wear them jeans with a little slim cut on it, boy. And I remember then, this guy, he was wearing, like, all red head to toe, like, Yardie guy. He was just like, me love them jeans. I was like, yeah, I can't wear these shits no more. I was like, big Buddha on the back coming all the way down to, like, the kneecaps, cuz. You know what I'm saying? Shit was lit. But,
you should dig those out again.
Oh, I wish. Do you know what? I think I sold them. I remember one time, this is how bad it was. I had Ed Hardy trainers, Christian Audigier jeans, Ed Hardy t-shirt. With the fucking tattoo sleeve, and I had the Ed Hardy jumper.
You're killing me.
Because I was like, it was like a good like 6 months where Ed Hardy was the shit, because Skepta had worn it once. So everyone was like, yeah, fucking Ed. Man, I look back on it now and I go, that is fucking horrific.
That's bad times.
It is bad times. I look back at some of the shit I used to wear and you go, what the fuck? I used to wear a lot of Lot 20. How old are you?
39.
30, okay, yeah, so you missed this era, but I had Lot 29, where used to be out with these. Characters, and the one thing I really wanted was an Avirex jacket.
Oh yeah,
the leather Avirex jacket. Oh my god!
To be fair,
dudes in my area used to get like stabbed for them. Like that's how.
Yeah, because they're expensive.
They were like £600. The only guys had them were drug dealers. So all the drug dealers would wear them, and they used to drive R6 bikes. That was like the shit all the drug dealers would have. And I'm these big leather jackets, man. That's what I wanted as a kid. But anyway, sorry. You got the hair.
Actually, I don't mind talking about the a huge moment for me. When I was like, my career is going well, is when I could afford my first Stone Island jacket.
Yes, brother.
Because when you I was a kid, when I was a kid, all I like literally all I wanted, and I was a big like love football.
Yeah,
and
casual.
So it was just a thing, and like there were just some kids when you were like 17, 18 who somehow
got the Stony.
Had a bit of Stony.
Yeah.
And I was just like, and you go to the shop, and I can just vividly remember, I just like stand in this one shop in Portsmouth when they sold it. Just be like, One day you'll be mine. One day.
Did you go for the one with the goggles on it?
No, that was more CP company.
Yeah.
Actually, to be fair, just the other day I was looking at some CP company and thinking, maybe I will go to goggles. It was just a massive moment for me.
That where you got the Stone Island?
This would have been when I was doing T4, actually.
T4? Yeah. And what Stony was it? What color were we talking?
It was actually quite modest. I think you want to start modest. Navy blue.
Yeah.
Just
with
sweet.
With a thing on the arm.
Sweet badge.
With a bad boy on the arm.
And there we go.
I remember my mum's husband had got a Stone Island, because he's like rocks all the Stone Island.
Yeah.
And it didn't fit him. And he gave it to me.
Oh.
And when I tell you, I rocked this Stone Island till it fell apart, bruv. That's bold.
Of course.
This matte black Stone Island. But I still got it in my closet.
Yeah.
That's like, you know.
Well, you're not throwing away Stoney.
I bought Stoney the other day. And it is that thing of, it sounds weird to people out there, but like, I remember, because I went to Crepe City, which is like a sneaker festival, last weekend, and I bought a Stone Island jacket. And I remember just thinking, and it even gave me that little, as being like, I remember young man, just all the motherfuckers wearing Stone Islands, and it was just a shit, man.
Yeah.
Fuck with that badge. That badge, man.
Yeah. But, I like, there's a there's like a sale that happens twice a year that is like, I can't work out what it is. It's like the PR company who look after Stone Island do a sort of end of season sale. But
well, for famous
it's,
people.
No. Uh-huh. No. They're just like for anyone. So they do it in East London. I get an email about it, and it's amazing, and go in, but it's like, it's lively because people are and you're getting it for, you know, it's less than half price. Yeah, it's amazing
because they've got the Stone Island outlet in Hackney now.
Have they?
Yeah. Oh, I'm gonna cut this out of the podcast, going motherfuckers.
Hang on.
Yeah. In Stone in Hackney, in
I'm just going to write that down in my notes.
Yeah, yeah. Mare Street. In Mare Street, they got Stone Island Outlet. Yeah, they got Night Town, they got Stone Island, they got Aquascutum.
Hang on.
They got Burberry. You know, the old
I'm not interested in any of the others. I'm just like, on Mare Street.
Yeah. They got Stone Island. You know where it's near? It's near the Moth Club. You see when you
know exactly where. Yeah,
Moth Club. You know, they bought them new shops.
Yeah.
There's a Stone Island outlet
right,
there.
Right, that's huge for me.
I went there the other day. And on Thursdays, that's when the drops are. And I went and got like a camera one the other day for like $150.
I love it.
Cold.
Anyway.
But, anyway, so
what
say,
I was going to say about this sale is that they have to take all the badges off. On all the racks.
Them.
Yeah. And so when you buy it, they've just got a bag of them. How many did you get? You got two. Okay, it's two for you.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
Yeah, it was the hats and all of that, man. But so that's a good moment, though.
I've got this is. I don't know. I think this is.
You are well dressed, dude.
Thank you. I think this is a funny anecdote, but I mean, you tell me. I was in Stone Island, the one in Soho.
Yeah.
And the. And there was a PR girl there who I was chatting to, and I was just genuinely like interested, because in other countries Stoney's a different thing, like it's high-end kind of fashion, like the technical fabrics and all that stuff, whereas obviously here, like, it has that football hooligan association. It's just got it. And I was saying, you know, does that bother you, like, how do you sort of try and move it away from that? And she's like, well, I kind of think it is kind of moving away, which is fair, because now, you know, a lot of
probably,
like
hooliganism, you know, kind of dead now.
Yeah, it's not really a vibe anymore. I mean, it probably is, but not
lower
as much.
League stuff.
And I said, oh, of course, there's that terrible thing where the guy who stabbed Lee Rigby, when he did his like thing to the camera, he's wearing a Stoney beanie.
Oh yeah.
And I was like, that must have been a nightmare for you. And she was like, yeah, but it wasn't. I mean, it's only, you know, and whatever. She just sort of weirdly didn't want to talk about it. I was like,
She brushed off
PR
person.
Yeah, which is fair enough. And I was like, yeah, okay.
Fair point.
And then we're chatting a bit more, and about maybe 5 minutes later, I said, and is it still, you know, it's still getting seen a lot on the terraces? And she goes, it was one guy. And I was like, no, terraces.
No,
she misheard me. I thought I said, is it still being seen on
terraces?
Which is really, and I was like, that's perfect.
Do you know what, man?
One guy!
Ice is sponsored by Stoney. He's got a really handsome guy in Syria with the Stone Island badge. Stone Island sponsoring the caliphate. When the Western democracy doesn't work, Stone Island. That is funny, man.
Don't think we get any free shit out of them.
No. I think I fucked up any of that. You want some more water, fam?
Yes, please.
But yeah, man, it is that weird moment. So when you done T4, that was your first presenting gig. When you done it,
did you
realise that was you? Because that's been your, like, I know you do multiple things. I know you do the podcast, and, you know, you're very well-versed, man. But, you know, would you say presenting's like the gig, bill payer?
It's definitely the thing that pays the bills, yeah.
So you see, when you done T4, did you like it?
Yeah, I did. It was really fun. I mean, I did it for... So I did music stuff on E4 first. So I did, like... And carried on doing it as well while I was doing T4. Did, like, 18 months of that. It was great fun. And then started doing T4. And did T4 for 4 years. Did enjoy it. But it's kind of... There's only a finite amount of time that you can do that for. Because it's quite silly... and it's quite young, I guess.
I just didn't
want to be the guy where people are like, why is he still doing that? And so I left. I think, like, I would have probably liked, just for me, because I was enjoying it, to do it for a bit longer. But I thought, no, get out. And
so how old was you when you left?
I would have been, hang on, when did I live? I lived in 2011, so I would have been like 31.
Okay, that's a good age. I think that's a good age.
It felt about right.
I think it's, you got to stop when the age is that you can't go to Iron Napa.
Yeah.
You know when that age when can't go Iron Napa on that, the 80s to 30s? Like, you can't, you know what I'm saying? You've just gone over that. So you're like, you know what?
Yeah. Yeah, because you remember, like, when me and my mates went to Ibiza, when we were like literally like the day after our A-levels and we went, and you remember those guys, we were like in an 1830s place, those guys who were, they were probably like late 20s, you were like, these guys are so old.
Yeah, granddad.
I could not speak to them.
I never went on the lads holiday to like Ibiza or Ayanapa or nothing. I kind of, I don't know if I say I regret it, but I don't know if I do, but I just never, I went to Amsterdam. Like I done that trip.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
When I was 18, I went to the Amsterdam and had the finest time of my life. I mean, there's nothing like the first time in Amsterdam, but especially being 18. But I've never done the old lads holiday.
I've got to say that genuinely, and I don't think I told my mates this at the time, but we were there for 2 weeks, and after about 5 days, I was trying to find out if I could move my flight home a bit earlier. I was just like, fuck.
Yeah.
This is like, it's full on.
2 weeks is a long time.
Like,
unless you're repping.
It's like foam parties and stuff.
Yeah, yeah,
Would you never like that? Just like, not really. Like, I'd sort of like, some of my mates were quite into it, and so you kind of go along with it.
Yeah,
but it wasn't
really. You sort of, you get enjoyment from other people's enjoyment. But
I wasn't getting enjoyment from my clothes getting ruined by foam.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah.
That was pissing me off.
Just like, that phone getting into the shit.
This is premium Ralphie.
It's fucking up my fibres. Yeah, I was there. That rule tight knit. When you left T4, what was your next gig you did? When's Tool Academy come around?
Yeah, so I think Tool Academy. Because
I like Tool Academy.
Tool Academy was fun. I loved Tool Academy.
Do you know what, man? That's the thing is, like, because I love freedom of speech and I love, you know, the other stuff you do, but like, you know, that tool. I like watching fun shit.
Yeah.
And I think that's what people, you know, people like when I say some of the shows I like, people go, what? Because they, you know, because I made some doc or whatever, and you know. But like my favorite shows, I like Cheaters.
Yeah, I like shit.
Yeah. Like, you know what I'm saying? Tool Academy wasn't shit, but I like Cheaters and stuff like that. But I've Tool Academy used that. I used to watch it with my sister, and actually would have me fucking howling.
Yeah,
that is such a. It was just a fun show, man.
Yeah, it was. It was.
And where was it filmed?
Really? So it was in. We filmed it in different places. So we did one in somewhere near York, one somewhere near Bristol, and one out in Spain.
Yeah,
and it was really, really good fun. I absolutely loved the casting. It was just funny. It was just a funny.
And I like how the dudes sort of didn't take it. You know, like they sort of element of like, you know, it's going to sound bad. They weren't the smartest dudes, but they were smart enough to know that they were the butt of the joke and didn't mind.
Yeah, yeah, and they were okay with it.
Yeah, and I think that's what I liked about it.
And they really didn't mind me, like, just coating them off to their face. They didn't mind it. They were just like, yeah, that's funny.
Right? It was really fun.
I was, you know, purely by chance, they didn't have, like, on the first series, quite understaffed, as, you know, lots of TV is, didn't really have anyone to write scripts, so I just wrote all my own stuff, and they just let me get on with it. Like, go on, do whatever you like. And I was like, really? Cool. And so it was excellent. It's the thing that people still, the one thing that people are still like, when's Tool Academy coming back?
Yeah.
When's Tool Academy
coming back? Is that the one that people ask you to do another series of?
It hasn't been on for 6 years. Yeah. But that's a good thing. It's good. It's nice. I'd do it as well. Like, I'd do it in a heartbeat.
So how did they pitch that to you? When they pitched that to you, was that an idea that you were down with, like, from the get-go?
Yeah,
or
so
did
when,
you have some coats in?
So they talked to me about it. I thought it sounded funny. I watched the, because it's an American show originally, I watched the American version. It was a bit like,
But the editing is, American TV editing is ridiculous sometimes.
But also, there's a weird thing, I think, with American reality shows where their casting is so strong. Like, they have such, like, insanely big characters who are just delivering, mental content.
Yeah.
That from a production point of view, you don't really have to make much effort. So like the sort of the framework of the show is pretty sort of flimsy, but then you just film what happens, and they're all like kicking off, and so it's quite fun. Whereas with ours, we knew that we weren't going to get those characters who were just going to give you stuff to fill the time, so we had to work harder to make sure it was going to be funny. And that was kind of what I think that's what appealed to me. I think we can do some really fun stuff.
The problem I have with American reality is sometimes it feels like that they've cast it from an agency.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? It doesn't feel like the average guy on the street. Yeah. It feels like it's been cast from an agency. And it's like these people who are like, this is my role.
Yeah.
As opposed to, and I don't like that in American reality TVs, I've seen them pop up on other things. I'm like, no, you're just meant to have done that. You're not meant to pop up on other stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe like a couple Big Brother people that we've let, you know, carry on and sort of go on to other things.
But that, I guess also what was helpful with Tool Academy is it was, in some sense, it was a bit ahead of its time in that you didn't have your kind of Love Island type. I mean, well, no, you had had Love Island, but in a very different form.
Yeah.
And I reckon that
I guess when we you say got 6 years different. Ago, it was pretty funny.
Yeah, it started in 2010, and I think, you know, we just got fairly normal blokes who were just like
shitty boyfriends,
just a bit shit to their girlfriends, and then the girlfriends were a bit shit to them. And it was just they felt quite relatable in a way that I love Love Island, but when I watch it, I kind of go, all of these people they feel like they're in a very
in bubble,
like a very particular, like they're in clubs that I don't go to in cordoned off areas anyway.
I get you.
People, like, they're quite a specific type.
Like, you have no interaction with those people.
They look amazing. Yeah. Whereas the people on Tool Academy, amazing. They look fine.
Some of them were
quite fit.
Yeah, but
some of the girls were quite fit.
I can imagine seeing them in the club.
Yeah.
I can see you're the Tiger.
Yeah.
You're Tiger Tiger hot.
Definitely Tiger Tiger.
You're not Tiger Tiger hot. You're like, you're hot for Tiger Tiger. you're not China White's hot. You know what I'm saying? Was it China White? What's that club called?
China White.
You're not China White hot. You know what I'm saying?
What's the one I'm trying to think of? Sugar Reef.
Did you ever go to the clubs and shit, like when you were doing the T4 stuff?
No.
Because you was in your early 20s, right?
Yeah.
Did you ever do that?
Mid-20s. Not particularly, no.
Because I never, I remember there was this one club in my area, right? It was called Faces. Faces.
Yeah.
When I tell you, Rick, I tell you this, brother, they would not let me in this club. Brother, I came with girls. I wore shoes. I've done a shirt. They motherfucker. They wouldn't. They just wouldn't. They let all my boys in. And they would never let me in the club. And I remember all I wanted to do was get in this fucking club, man. And they would just never let me in this fucking club. So I never even tried to pursue going to the China. Like, all my boys be like, yo, I'm going Central and all this. And I'd be like, brother, I'm just not going. So
I can't get in Faces, guys.
I can't be getting faces.
I don't want to go up west
100%.
And then not get in there.
Because a lot of times as well,
home on my own.
They would look at your ID and see where you lived, and we're like, yeah, you ain't coming in it. That happened to me when I went to Windsor. I went to a club in Windsor. Me and my boys went to a club in Windsor. They looked at our IDs.
Did you go to Windsor?
Because this guy, why not?
Yeah.
You know, trying to, you know, it wasn't work. I wasn't getting laid up in Ilford, so let me try outsource.
Let's go royal.
And we tried to get in this club in Windsor, and I remember they would look at our IDs, and they'll say, oh, some boys from your area came down the other day, you ain't coming in, lads, and they totally lock you out. But I mean, yeah, I would, you know, because you never went to, like,
it was definitely, like, definitely an option.
Yeah, you were famous.
I just didn't, that's just never really been my thing. I'd much rather hang out with my mates in Kentish Town.
Yeah.
Basically.
And
I knew that I never wanted to be the sort of person who'd be in tabloids for sort of whatever. I don't like that side of it.
Yeah. I guess it was.
And it's quite easy, like, it is quite easy to avoid. Like, it really is.
Mm.
Like, you
just don't,
like,
come stumbling out of a nightclub.
Yeah. Just don't. And also, like, don't be a dickhead with girls and stuff like that.
Mm.
And then you're fine. Just effectively, like, if you're like quite a nice guy,
yeah, people tend to leave you alone.
Yeah,
it's not exciting.
No, that's the thing. I was effectively, to them, boring.
Yeah.
And I didn't really want to go.
Well, they should know what you're doing up in Kentish Town, mate.
Yeah.
You and your mates are going to fucking wild shit.
Yeah,
that's where the real wild shit happened.
We did a thing where we'd go out on you know, Friday or Saturday night in Camden, and no good clubs in Camden. So Camden, was it Camden Palais or Coco then? Whatever, like that. You go there sometimes. But we were obsessed with trying to get into the Electric Ballroom. For a night there. And we'd always get there and then remember that it was a goth night. And we'd queue up for ages with all these goths and then get turned away every time. So they were like, well, no. And we were like, oh, for fuck. Like,
that was your Faces.
And then on, this must have been after six consecutive weeks of, like, because it became a thing. We're like, no, we're going to get in. We're going to get in.
Yeah.
Never getting in. We all, like, went and bought goth costumes and like did like the full like got a fake like yeah. piercing and a and like the black lipstick and nails yeah, and all yeah. that kind of stuff and got in.
You got in and was it
do you know what? We had a great night.
Yeah.
Really, the goths were a good crew.
Yeah, they're a good crew, and it's also that thing of this that win.
Yeah,
is that relief?
No, absolutely.
Just like, fuck it, we beat the system.
Pure euphoria.
Jamal. So you're doing T4.
Yeah.
And you're mid-20s. I know it's a weird question, right? And it's a strange question, but it's going somewhere.
Yeah.
When did you realise that you were famous? Now, I know you wasn't, you know, Michael Jackson. You know what I'm saying? I'm not trying to say, like, you know, it was some ridiculous life change. Because I mean, just knowing you, the few times we've hanged out, you're still very normal.
Yeah.
you're very normal. And it's like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, you're a normal dude and stuff. But
hopefully,
When did you realise that, like, that you were being recognised? Because I remember my first moment was surreal. And I'm not famous at all. So I'm not trying to put it out there like I'm famous. But it's when I got recognised in Amsterdam. Someone called me Jumanji. They got my name wrong, but they got it in the same lettering. Yeah,
it's ballpark, isn't it?
Yeah, it's ballpark. Yeah. And I remember this being, oh, that's weird, right? Yeah. I didn't really have a large enjoyment for it. Like, it never was my thing, you know. But did you, like, when was that?
I'm just imagining, like, they know that Jumanji is the film.
Like,
what are the chances that your mum has thought, you come out and you're like, you know what, he's a Jumanji.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's a clear
and the
Jumanji.
Way he said it as well, he said it with so much enthusiasm, like, Jumanji. And I was
like,
yeah, sure. Yeah,
go
yeah,
on then.
I'll take it.
Go on then.
And I'm in Amsterdam, so I'm already, like, you know, off my nut.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So
you'd take anything at that point.
So any, but even just that, or any form of weirdness was tripping me out.
Yeah.
Because I'm already like, on, you know, I'm already on edge being stoned out of my gills. Because I can't smoke weed. Like, weed has just never been a substance that I can smoke.
Not for me either.
It makes me anxious.
It makes me feel sick, first of all, and then get like a mad headache.
Yeah.
And then a bit grumpy. That's all it does for me.
Yeah, it keeps me up as well. Because it makes me go to sleep. But I will stay up to 5 o'clock in the morning if I smoke a joint. So I know lots of
people who it works very nicely for. I'm not one of them.
I like a beer. But you were saying, so when was that?
You just notice that people look at you. Mm. This is the thing. When we're doing T4, you're on the telly regularly a lot, and a certain sort of demographic, so sort of teenagers up to probably 30, they're watching T4. Mm. Like, even if it's just on in the background. So you sort of seep into
the
people's consciousness. And you become recognisable, but without necessarily having a name attached. So people are more looking at you sort of quizzically. Mm. It's the classic thing of like thinking, maybe I went to school with that guy. But you just got like you end up having a familiar face without being like properly famous. It's kind of that. I mean, like now, people regularly confuse me with Grimmy. We don't look anything alike. Regularly confuse me with Greg James. I mean, maybe a bit more similar, but not that much.
Yeah, yeah.
And then what really confuses them is that they've got Greg James in their head, they've got Rick in their head, and they just, honestly, I get called Rick James more than, it's incredible, because people are like, Rick James is a name.
Rick James is a name that I know.
That's Rick James. Yeah.
It's weird how when they recognize your face and they mix it with another face and it comes together, like I remember one time I was at Latitude Festival, and a guy had come up to me and he goes, mate, I loved you on Apprentice Extra Time. I'm like, no, that's Romesh. That's not me, it's Romesh. And he goes, mate, it was you. And I go, bruv, it wasn't me. Like, why would I lie? And he goes, mate, it was you. Like, he was getting angry.
Yeah.
It was you.
Why are you lying to me about
yeah,
this?
Yeah, yeah,
you were great on that show.
He said, stop fucking around. I'm like, mate, I'm not fucking around. It weren't me, right? And Romesh, he was telling me when he was in America, he was filming his show and he was driving through up on this Pope car, like open car, and people were shouting at him, hate thy neighbor.
Yeah.
And it's just that weird because they just mix the brain and they go, well, brown beard. Whoa.
Yeah.
It's the same person. It's weird when it's that sort of mixture.
Yeah. I think
I wish I was called Rick
what's
James.
Kind of,
that'd be cool.
Yeah, it's a great name. The sort of heartening thing about it for me is that because there's something depressing about the like people confusing you and Romesh because he's just like, come on.
They just don't.
Look alike.
Sri Lankan.
They're like not the same race. Like you're literally just going sort of
it's
brownish.
It's a totally different world.
But it's nice to know that people are also doing it with sort of tallish white guys.
Yeah.
Like,
it's the same thing.
Just well, like, it's good for me because
if I bomb out a gig, I just say I'm Romesh Raghunath.
Yeah, and out you go.
And I go, start shouting at his wife and kids. Shout out to my wife and kids. Romesh Raghunath. Start slagging everyone else. Tell Romesh, tell him that Romesh said, fuck you. That's what Romesh said. All right, bro. When we come to end, bro, thank you so much for doing it. I really appreciate it, man. And thank you so much. You know what, man? Like, I remember when we done a safe word and you was a really nice guy. I think you always remember dudes who are cool with you when you're first starting out.
Well, you know? I said this to Ema the other day, because you remember, you might not remember this, but with Safe Word, we had these awful, like, auditions, effectively,
yeah,
for
yeah,
comics.
Yeah, 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 yeah,
so
I remember. I did
to,
it.
Like, come to a room and, like, you know, young comics would come in and have to do a bit, like, slating whoever Katie Price. And it was really tough, I just felt like it was like a brutal thing to ask people to do anyway. And you came in and you were just fucking funny, straight off the bat. And like straight afterwards, I was just a producer, like, we should book him.
Kind, man. That's
he's
very
really
kind.
Good.
I remember I was doing, I won't gonna say who the person was, but I wrote Alzheimer's jokes, and then the producer's like, you cannot do that because they give you a pack. Of the person.
I
don't want to put it out there, but it's like, I thought I had to be brutal.
Yeah.
Because I thought that's just what you had to do. And it was like, their father had Alzheimer's. So I remember the producer just said to me, you cannot do
that. You're
going
to need to just step that back a little bit, please.
And I did the guy with the wanted. And I remember one of the lines I had, even my agent after, was like, you didn't have to add the tag. Because I remember, that was like my second TV show I did.
Yeah.
So I had done John Bishop Show.
Yeah.
And I'd done Safe Word. I was shitting myself because it was the last roast bit. And I remember one of my lines was, it was a guy from Wanted. And I was like, you're as wanted as me with a backpack on a plane. Everyone clapped. Went, no, stop. In Belgium. The day after bombing. And my agent was like, why did you put on the tag? You got a round of applause. I was like, no, stop.
No, I've got a bit more.
In Belgium. I just had to say in Belgium, right? I don't know what the fuck I was thinking, man. That was fun. But you was always a cool dude, man. And I remember that, you know, because it is that, you know, when you're first starting out in the business, you have this sort of fear of the unknown. And it's always nice when you sort of, you know, someone who, you know, you've seen before and is seasoned, and they're just like, yeah, man, you know, and they're just kind to you and they're just cool with you, and they, you know, they put you at ease, man. And you're...
Well, I got to say that also it's worth pointing out that there's a lot of dickheads.
There is.
And so if you are even like halfway nice, people remember it.
I think it's that thing though. And I think it's something that, you know, I've learned now as well, is that, you know, you just gotta be that it sounds basic, but treat the people how you wanna be treated.
Yeah.
Because there's so many arseholes. The guy, and do you know who I'm, and I try now. And I have always done, because I was raised correct. But, you know, I make an extra concerted effort where if it's the runner or the executive producer, you treat him with the same.
Yeah.
And you know what I'm saying? It doesn't matter where the position is. Because I think it's with this job, it can be so much about positioning. It can be so much, I'm this. And you're, and it's that, and it's not about that. It's about, we're all just trying to do a job and pay some fucking bills, man.
Yeah.
You know, and
also,
stuff,
I think crucially, even if you're going to approach it very, very cynically.
Yeah.
And this is such a like truism. The runners, like I literally have worked with,
and they will be
with people when I was 15 years ago when I was starting out, runners, junior researchers who are now commissioners. So like, of course you'd be nice to everyone. Like, it's mad not to be.
No,
even if you're just doing it selfishly, it's mad not to be.
Even
so, when I look at people
be nice.
Being dickheads, I'm like, what is wrong with you?
And they
you?
Will remember.
Of course
because
they
remember. The same way.
Remember.
I remember who was nice to me, and I remember I was going, motherfucker, and you remember.
Who were they?
I'll tell you off. Don't worry about that. I've got a long flow. And the list isn't surprising.
Yeah.
If you know anything about comedy, you wouldn't be surprised by who the people who are fucking arseholes are.
Do you ever do anything with Sean Locke?
No.
Okay. I don't bring him up for any reason. No reason.
There's no reason at all.
No reason. No,
fair enough. Well,
just
you know what? I won't be working with him now. If you ain't cool with Rick, you ain't cool with me. I'm joking, Sean. If you got a project, hook me up. So, I need the work.
I guess I'll take it back as well. I suppose.
But no, I really do appreciate you, man. And you know, brother. And you got anything coming out? Sorry, you want to plug anything?
Oh yeah, I should. I don't know if I have actually.
No.
No, I think we could go plug free.
Yeah,
it's nice to go plug free.
Let's have a chat.
Yeah, I was. I absolutely. When I was, when someone, you know, however this happened, someone said, "Do you want to do the podcast with Jamali?" I was like, "Yeah,
yeah."
Have I got anything to promote? No,
no. I did have a chat.
But I like that guy.
I appreciate that.
Yeah,
because you know, I found it. Yeah, I found this podcast. People who want to promote stuff, it is difficult.
Yeah,
because it's we have one interview
really
in particular.
Want to talk about
didn't
that
we?
Stuff.
We have one of you in particular.
Mm.
Where
bring the book out?
Yeah, 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 and they, yeah, they.
It's, just, it's so painful.
It was like. You know,
I hate promo anyway.
And you can, so. Yeah. Oh, mate, promo runs for me are the fucking worst. Especially if it's not a show that I loved.
Yeah.
You kind of go, hey, and it's the same questions, and you know, that's why I try and do this podcast where it's just trying to actually have a casual conversation as opposed to being like a plug based thing. But yeah, no.
I mean, we've mainly, if anything, plugged Stony.
Yeah, we plugged Stony. Get your Stony out there. Just Stony, send us some shit. Me and Rick will be good fucking.
Honestly,
we're not terrorists. But I could play the terrorist market. So I could, in Belgium, I could sell to ISIS. We win a perfect marketing campaign.
Expand.
There you go. Anyway, but no, thank you so much for coming. Really appreciate you, brother. And
thanks,
I'm sure we'll run into each other again. We always seem to run each other.
Feels like we will.
All right, brother. Well, thank you so much. This has been Jamali Matters with a breakdown with Rick Edwards. Thank you so much, brother.
Just now, I can't stop thinking about the person who called you Jumanji.
Oh yeah, mate, and he was so excited. He was like, Jumanji! And I was like, yeah.
I wonder if he goes home later and is like, oh, fuck it.
I really fucked that one up.
Jumanji?
Yeah. And then there was another guy in the shop, and it was this guy, and he goes, and I walk in the shop and I'm buying some cigarettes, and I swear to God, he was about 50. And he just started screaming, I know you. And I'm buying the cigarettes and I'm paying for it. And he goes, I know you. And I was like, well, thank you very much. He goes, no English. So he's always just seeing the clip. But this speaks no English to have a conversation. But he's just screaming, I know you. Just screaming at me. And I was like, yeah, I appreciate it, man.
You really wonder what those kind of people want to get out of that
interaction. And then I said to him, oh, thank you very much. So what have you seen? He goes, oh, no English.
Oh, no.
And I just go, all right. So that's
we'll leave it there.
Yeah. End of that conversation. All right, Rick, brother. Thank you so much. Yeah, man. Peace, bro. What's up, guys? That was Rick Edwards. What a fun podcast that was. I hope you guys enjoyed it. It kind of got a lot more, not political, but it got opinionated, which I liked. I actually enjoyed that. You know, there's a lot of opinions said there, you know, and sort of ideas of how he thinks and what he thinks about and stuff like that. So that was really fun. I really enjoyed it. So next week we have Mo the Comedian on, which I'm really looking forward to. I used to do gigs with Mo back in the day still. I used to do his gig. He used to run a gig up in up the creek. I used to do his gig back in the day. I think I did it once and bombed. But yeah, so you know, he's like a comedian. He's a host now. He's got a show on Channel 4. YouTube sensation, YouTube Instagram sensation, internet sensation. So he's going to be on the podcast next week. So yeah, man, make sure you guys check it out. We're going to play the intro. What I'm going to do also is motherfuckers been hitting me up saying like about that intro music. They want to hear a little bit longer the intro music. So can we do that? Can we put the whole song on? We're going to put the whole song on at the end on this one. A little treat for you if you want to hear that whole song. So that song basically is a custom song by the rapper Cool Keith. And he was gracious enough to make that song for me. It's a custom song, so I hope you guys enjoy it. We're gonna play the whole song. It's only a minute long, so if you wanna hear that sweet song, then check it out, man. So next week it's Mo the Comedian. My name's been Jamali Maddox. This has been The Breakdown with the Hook.
Jamali Nine. Jamali. Jamali 9000 from Mars. Just land over Max with the computer. My wings expand on Earth, around the universe. The superhero just written a verse. The J on my shirt for Jamali. Never using a Molly. Walking down the galaxy, computers on my hand. Built in like I'm a man. Machine since I was growing up with children. Mechanical rapper putting a robot flow together. I made a steal in any weather. Disguised more than Spider-Man in a sweater. Optimus way after prime. Standing on top of the world, I gotta shine. Just like my pop's new Cadillac CT6. The patch on my eye, I be Rick. The lyrics are slick, like new now wave grease.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.